I'm Eva Hartling. Welcome back to the Brand is Female podcast. This is my first episode for 2025, and as usual, I took a little much-needed break over the holidays. I'm back with a brand new season, which I'm so excited to share with you. To kick off the new year, I decided to do something a little different, basically to come on my own show as a guest. I asked my friend, creative director Roxane Doucet, who is also managing director for creative agency Al Dente in the US, and by the way, you'll hear from her in an upcoming episode as well, to host this conversation. If you've been listening to the Brand is Female podcast for a while, I hope you enjoy getting to know me a little bit better. Here's to 2025, where we take bold risks and are not afraid to be vulnerable. This season of our podcast is brought to you by TD Bank Group Women in Enterprise. TD helps women in business achieve success and growth through its program of educational workshops, financing, and mentorship. Visit thebrandisfemale.com/podcast and follow the link to find out how TD can help you.
Hi, everybody. My name is Roxane Doucet, and I have the pleasure to interview Eva Hartling, the amazing founder of The Brand is Female. So now you're in the reverse position. How does it feel?
It's a little uncomfortable because I'm used to asking the questions. So this is highly unusual, but I'm so glad that it's you asking me these questions, which makes it a little more bearable, I would say. Because you and I have such interesting and deep conversations about our work and about, you know, what we want our purpose to be. So I feel like you're the right person to be asking me these questions today.
Thanks for asking me to do it. I'm very excited. And I'm excited to dive deeper into your journey and also your aspiration and inspiration. So let's start a little bit about, let's talk about why you started The Brand is Female and how this idea came about.
Okay, I love that you're going right in there. So before I've started my company basically almost 7 years ago. And before that, I worked for little over 15 to 18 years, something along those lines, in the corporate world, and always in marketing and communication. So that was the common thread. And I observed, and in these corporate positions, and I worked for different organizations, some were in finance, in tech, in retail, and then I ended up working in luxury jewelry, where I spent almost 10 years. And that's where I experienced being part of a senior leadership team. And, you know, I was lucky because I was there for a number of years to be promoted and have increasingly senior positions. And I witnessed firsthand the challenges and limitations for women in business. And at that time, too, it wasn't just about what was happening to me in my career. It was seeing with other women in the business world were experiencing and going through. And, you know, now this goes back almost 10 years ago. A lot has changed since. But at that time, I very much felt like it was important to do something to spotlight, support female leadership, to provide a space where we could have more representation for women and the amazing things that women leaders were doing, whether it was women in the workplace, women entrepreneurs. And, you know, it was the era of, I think, you know, although I hate the term, the girl boss movement kind of started it all a little bit. And there was kind of that glamorization of female entrepreneurship that was happening around that time. And a lot of initiatives were starting to take place. My expertise was always in, you know, marketing, PR, communication. So my vision was to start an agency and be able to work with women in business and, you know, provide my services with a focus on women-owned, women-led companies, but also use my experience around communications and PR to really spotlight what women were doing in the business world, generally speaking. So it
Amazing.
started, the Brennies Female started both as an agency and as a podcast. So, going back 7 years ago, there weren't that many podcasts yet. It was still kind of a fresh
True.
idea. There's a lot more today. But I remember having a conversation with a friend of mine, and she's like, "You love talking about female leadership. You love talking to women. Why don't you start a podcast and tell these stories?" And it felt like such the right medium to be able to put a spotlight on these women. Because the other thing I had observed, we lacked representation of women role models. So even as I was coming up in my career, I remember just looking at the composition of senior leadership teams for the organizations I was working for. There weren't that many women in leadership positions. Often you'd have one or two in a group of, 10 or whatever. Board roles, there weren't that many women owning board roles. And women tend to always fall in the same categories, right? Like the VP of HR, the VP of communications were often women, and that was kind of it, right? Even less female CEOs, even less chairwoman of the board, was still relatively rare. And what I realized too is the women who did have positions of power, and I'll include women entrepreneurs in that category, we weren't hearing from them as much as we were hearing from successful male entrepreneurs, for example. That's still a challenge today. If you look at media, there are studies that have been done, and something like 75% of media space in North America is occupied by men speaking, men being represented versus women. So my idea was to really to do something about it.
Amazing. No, that's so inspiring. And I feel you were like a visionary also doing that in Montreal. And we know, as French Canadians, sometimes it's like the market can feel a bit small. So I'm curious to hear about like, did you, when you started, did you have support from other women? And how did you feel that the market in Montreal was helping you, or maybe more in Canada because you worked a lot in Toronto as well.
And I'm lucky that I've always had roles in my professional career that had me, be present in other parts of Canada. And I grew up in both cultures too. My dad's English Canadian, my mom's French Canadian. I always spent a lot of time in Toronto, in Vancouver. I spent a lot of time in the US in my career as well. So I had built that network already. And it felt more obvious to do this work in English because it's a bigger market, right? So I have clients who are based in Montreal who are, French-speaking organizations or leaders, but a lot of my clients are outside Montreal as well, and the rest of Canada and elsewhere. And at that point, I was lucky to have support, yes, from leaders, established entrepreneurs. But quickly, so what's interesting too is quickly there was support, not just from women. And this is something that I've observed over time too. Like a lot of the people who have supported me in my career prior to launching my business and when I did launch my business were men as well. So very early on, the importance of what we call male allyship, which sounds, it's like such a concept that's been developed, but really just men who do want to support women who believe that everyone deserves, a fair opportunity, and men who have noticed firsthand that women don't always get a seat at the table. So they bring us in, right? And or they bring the chair for us to sit at the table. I was lucky enough to have, many of these men in my network too. And today, and I have to say, today my clients are not just women. We work with a lot of organizations that cater to women who, deal with a female audience. But it's not just women anymore. The part where we do work with women in business, women entrepreneurs, we do thought leadership work around gender equity with a lot of organizations that may or may not be led by women, but there's definitely male decision makers in the process as well. So it's really work that includes everybody. But yes, the people who supported me were both men and women, and most of them people who, I had networked with at some point in my career, but also companies that were interested in being part of this movement and companies that see the value in just having opportunities that support all of their employees, right? So a lot of the work we do with financial institutions, with insurance companies, with larger corporations, they've really seen the importance of offering the best workplace possible for everyone who works with them. And yes, some of these organizations are led by women and some are not.
And also, what's really great about the brand is females. Like, you really shed light into like a amazing female entrepreneur or athlete or artist that are breaking barriers. And I know you work with like many different sectors, but can you tell us a little bit about like what did you notice throughout the years since you launched the your business? Like, what is the future of female empowerment? I know we don't like the term, but like, how do you see it evolving in the next few years?
And I'll explain why I don't like the term because, it's kind of hard to describe. Like, I use female leadership more than female empowerment, because the term empower implies that women don't have power to begin with, that they need to be given power. Women have power. We are born powerful, right? As much as men are. Often we don't have the same opportunities. Again, I think the best metaphor is we don't get invited to sit at the same table, or we're not even invited in the room, right? But power we do have, and I think it's more about something that we're able to create and make happen for ourselves, as opposed to waiting for someone to empower us. So that's the distinction I like to make around that term. But yes, female empowerment as a movement is, something we refer to as a society. And listen, I've been very excited by the changes. I think it's still, and I'll make a distinction between, protecting women's rights at a societal, political level is a whole other conversation. When we talk about female leadership and women having the same opportunities as men in the workplace and in the business, I've seen a lot of gains over the years. Things that really, and I think I was sharing with you, I just wrote a piece for my newsletter where I called out what I'm forecasting as the 10 trends in gender equity for 2025. And some of the things I highlighted were, first of all, we're now having conversations about women's health and how it impacts their experience in the workplace. So generally speaking, it's known as the three M's, right? So menstruation, menopause, and motherhood. These are realities. They're a big part of women's lives. For a long time, they were very much taboo subjects. It is not something, even in our day-to-day experience, I mean, we used to hide if we had to go to a washroom and bring a tampon with us. You would hide it in your sleeve or hide it in your bag. You wouldn't tell your colleagues that you were on your period unless you were with
True.
just women. That's changed over time. We're having conversations about this is a reality. All of us menstruate, right? And it's impacting how we operate in the workplace. And I do want to call out this is individuals who menstruate, and generally speaking. Now companies are dedicated to offering the right conditions within the workplace to cater to these important parts of women's lives. There's conversations around how to better support women who go on mat leave. What needs to be done so that both for the teams that work for the mothers who take time off, when they come back, what does that look like? Having better framework around that space. Menopause. Finally, we're having conversations about perimenopause and menopause. This was a topic that was ignored. Women would talk about it among themselves, There's still not enough medical research done around it, but that is starting to change. If you look at the number of podcast episodes that's come out in the last 3 months talking about menopause, that is impressive. That is a major change that's happening. A lot of scientists are now paying attention, a lot more attention to this. And, women are finally feeling seen and feeling like our experiences and knowledge. That's a huge step. Women's gains in sports. In Canada and in the US, we just had, it's been a year now, over a year, PWHL, Professional Women's Hockey League. So women are able to play at a professional level in hockey. They weren't up until recently. But more importantly, arenas are full. So these games are selling out. They are, selling tickets. There is an interest from the public in watching women play sports at a pro level. Soccer League was just born. There's a professional WNBA team coming to Toronto. We see more space, for women athletes, even in Olympic Games. So these are huge gains. We're seeing even the numbers are still growing slowly, but there is an increase in financing that is being given to women entrepreneurs. We hear of more resources being available to women entrepreneurs. Financial institutions in Canada are stepping up, including commercial banks, including BDC as well. So all of this is very, it's a positive sign. And I think women are stepping up. Women leaders are more comfortable talking about their achievements. They're more comfortable putting themselves out there. I do a lot of coaching and I teach workshops around personal brand and thought leadership. And this is something I always share with women. When you are comfortable talking about your experience, and as entrepreneurs, there is something known as the founder effect, right? There's many more entrepreneurs today. Technology has made it possible to start a business, much more easily than it was, let's say, 10 or 15 years ago. So we do see the number of entrepreneurs and new businesses go up. We want to know who the founder is. We want to know who the face of a brand or an organization is. Women still tend to be a little bit more shy about putting themselves out there. We're finally seeing that change. I think social media is a great tool to help change that narrative as well. And then another recent example, because pop culture is so visible to all of us, Hollywood is making huge headway. Nicole Kidman
Absolutely.
starring in Baby Girl, which came out over Christmas, is a remarkable step forward. Female director, female scriptwriter who wrote an erotic thriller and directed an erotic thriller, starring a 57-year-old woman who is having an affair with a much younger guy in her workplace. She keeps her job. She doesn't get punished because the old narrative would have been, oh, if a woman behaves that way, she's gonna have to pay the price, right? Demi Moore, who, also over 50, just starred in The Substance, just won her first Golden Globe, of her entire career. And she spoke about that. She didn't have the visibility or the credibility as an actress until now. But now we are, and it wasn't possible up until recently to see women of, over 50 have a starring role in movies like that. So Hollywood, sports, the business world, support from a financing standpoint, we are making these huge gains, and I find that really I'm very hopeful about what this means for the future.
Yeah, I think it's amazing to see the positive changes and also for the next generation, right? Because I feel the, let's say, our mom generation, they didn't have necessarily these role models. So I don't know how you feel about like if you had a mentor, like a woman mentor when you were like, let's say, growing up or starting at the beginning of the business, or do you feel really it's the shift is happening now, but could have happened before, or
It's interesting because, well, I'll let you in on a little secret. My mentors were mostly men. When I started my career and my first mentor was a teacher I had in university, and you and I have something in common. I also spent time in university studying management and communications and feeling like it was a bit of a waste of time. I wanted real work experience, and I was lucky enough to study in a program that did support, students doing internships and doing work while they studied. So I had a teacher who was a senior leader in a large PR firm, who basically saw potential and, introduced me. And my first job was basically working with BDC. I was still in university working with IBM in media relations, and those were great. And working for a financial institution and then a tech company, I was surrounded by men, and most leaders in the companies were male as well. And I had great mentors who supported me and taught me a lot and opened doors for me. And then I often talk about the difference between mentorship and sponsorship. A mentor is someone you who's going to be kind of that person you can get great advice from, kind of have a two-way exchange and kind of take in their expertise. But a sponsor, which can be the same person as your mentor, is going to be the person speaking about you when you're not present in a room. It's going to be the person opening doors for you. And I was lucky enough to have male sponsors who did that for me. And I'm thankful to all of them. At that time, I have to say, it's not that there weren't options for women. There were less women in leadership roles, and maybe it had to do also with the industries I was working in. But again, going back to how I answered your first question, what I was noticing is less women in leadership positions. So, it's not that there weren't women around, but they didn't have the same senior positions or the, decision-making positions that more men did. So the difference I'm seeing now, and that had to change over time. I think now we see more women, A, interested in those positions, knowing it is possible for them to climb the ladder and have access to those positions. I think what's changed too is ageism used to be a big reality. We talk about sexism, but ageism in the reverse way. So not just in a sense of you're done after you're 50, and if you're a woman, you might be done after you're 45, but ageism also in the way of you can't be a senior leader until you're at least 45, right? So for women, that left such a narrow window because you were too young, too young, too young, not enough experience, not mature enough. Oh, you're 43, maybe now you're ready. But hey, at 45, you're out the door, you're about to have, you're going home. If there's gray hair, we don't want you around anymore, right? So that window was so narrow for women, and that's changed. And that's a beautiful thing because listen, if you've got the expertise, the maturity, who cares if you're a VP at 25 or at 43? It doesn't always have to do. Becoming a senior leader doesn't, you don't need 3 decades of experience, right? Again, it depends on the industry, it depends on the organization, but that's a huge shift that I've also observed in the business culture.
Are you ready to be inspired and connected? I'm really excited to share that we have officially launched the Brand is Female Conversation Series. Come and join us for a monthly conference that's changing the game in Montreal, Vancouver, and Toronto. Engage with fellow women thought leaders, innovators, and visionaries. Get ready for insightful discussions and powerful networking opportunities presented by TD Women in Enterprise. Visit our website, go to the events section, and secure your spot today. I can't wait to meet you in person.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting because also you put amazing women together. You organize workshop globally. Do you notice? I mean, you're creating this also safe space for women and business owner to share. Do you notice there's like common challenge amongst these women?
Yes. And it's like almost it's over 6 years of doing this podcast. So I've interviewed hundreds of women. I've met a large number of women through these workshops, through the work I do, and we organize events across the country in partnership with TD Bank, their Women in Enterprise segment. So I'm lucky enough to have spent a lot of time in discussion with women in business, women entrepreneurs. And yeah, you can distill down the lessons, the challenges are often the same. What's interesting though is and you know, one of them, for example, is dealing with imposter syndrome, right? It, kind of that self-doubt. There's something, and I hate the term imposter syndrome because it implies that there's something wrong with us. Like syndrome makes it sound like an illness. Whereas it's pretty normal to feel, to experience self-doubt when we're trying to operate in a world that wasn't built by us for us. So again, back to my metaphor of we're not usually, there were a lot of rooms that we weren't invited in. Some rooms we're still not invited in, although it's getting better. So it's pretty normal when you get in there for the first time to feel self-doubt and to ask yourself if you're in the right place and to be a little shy at first about using your voice. And if you happen to work in an industry that is still male dominated and you're seeing mostly men around you, you feel like an outsider. And that, you know, that is 100% normal. That happens to most women. Interestingly enough, in conversations recently, imposter syndrome happens to a lot of male entrepreneurs as well. So we can't discard that, but there's something specific, I think, about the female experience where, again, some of these spaces are relatively new for us, and some of these tools we're using for the first time, right? And I see that a lot when I give workshops around thought leadership and personal branding. For a lot of women, they feel like they're not ready to put themselves out there. I think there might be a little less hesitation for some men in some categories. Again, it's not everybody. I have an example of a client of mine who works in technology, and she's created this unbelievable business in, you know, deep computing, something very specific. There's very few companies of this nature doing this type of advanced deep computing. She's a woman at the helm, and she wasn't comfortable recently going to speak at a trade event, you know, an international conference for her industry. She sent her chief technology officer instead of her. And she felt that because this industry, which technology, especially deep computing, is, you know, still heavily male dominated, she felt like she wasn't going to be taken seriously, even though she's the CEO and the founder of the company. So there's still something interesting there where I think we kind of have to rewire our brains. So that definitely comes up a lot. I think women sometimes struggling with, again, it might depend a little bit on the industry, but you know, creating the right network and finding the right contacts. Sometimes it's a little easier for men to network, and they tend to have natural space, like organic ways of networking. They play golf with each other, they're hanging out at the gym with each other. So that's easy. I'll call my banker, my buddy's a lawyer, we play golf together. They've kind of built this very organic network that they have access to throughout their career. For women, sometimes it's a little harder. We tend to want to be more intentional in our type of networking, but I find women are getting a lot better at that. And probably we can credit all of the organizations, you know, including mine, but there's so many great organizations doing work around creating spaces for women to network and meet each other. And I find networking is not as scary anymore for women. Like we have access to those safe spaces.
And I mean, I wanted to ask you the question because, I mean, you're someone that I look up to, and
Thank you.
you're, I feel like the fear of being seen, I mean, you're putting yourself out there, and for me, it's such an inspiration. Did you ever struggle with imposter syndrome or this, like, this fear of,
100%.
like, showing face, you know?
100%. Well, and even this fear, even hearing my voice when I started the podcast. Yeah, launching my business was interesting because I spent my career in PR and marketing, and I had jobs where often it was part of my work to be the face and the voice of a company. And the last company I was at before launching my business, I was there for almost 10 years. I was CMO, VP responsible for the brand, for brand strategy. I was very visible in relation to that company, but that was easier because I wasn't promoting my work. I was representing a company that had a whole structure and people behind it, right? So it was easier in a way, even though it was my face and I was, very present and visible in the media. It was a different experience when I launched my company, and then when I was speaking up, it was about my own work, and the company name was, mine, and I didn't have this machine behind me supporting me. It was me, essentially. I mean, I have a team, but it was really what I created, and I was talking about my own work. So that took a lot of adjustment. And I think coming from a communications marketing background certainly helped because, I've spoken to media my entire career, and I know how to do that. But I did have to get over my own fears around, does anybody care? Does anybody want to hear me speak about female leadership? Does anybody, want to hear what I have to say? And I think for me, it was kind of understanding and getting feedback of how much I'm helping other women when I do this. And when I put myself, still today, when I write a newsletter and when it's a more personal topic in a personal tone, in my head, I'm like, who gives a shit? Like, who's gonna read this? Like, who cares? But when I hear, even if there's only two people who write back and say, oh my God, that spoke to me so much. Thank you for the work you're doing. I would get emails like that when I launched a podcast of women saying, like, this is unbelievable. You've created this space for us to be visible. This has meant so much for me in my career. Listen, if I touch two women every week, like, that's already wonderful. So I think that's how I was able to overcome, is kind of seeing the impact. And because this is not about me, this is about helping other women. And as a group, we're able to be more powerful, more impactful, and really just, again, have access to those opportunities, which, and again, it's not what shifted for me too, is seeing how many men are actually supportive of this work, and how many men are thrilled to see a spotlight place on the amazing work that women are doing.
And I think it's also so healing to know that you can contribute and help people and challenge them, but also support them. And like, I'm curious to hear about your experience with like protecting also your energy, because you give so much, right? And you're a healer in a sense. You bring your experience like at the forefront, and you bring amazing people to the table, but it's a lot of energy also. And how do you take the time to take care of yourself and also like to manage a work-life balance?
So I love that you're asking me that question because I love asking it to women. And, I'm probably not the great example. I'm speaking to you with, I just overcame a stomach flu and I, should be in bed probably, but whatever. I think, first of all, work-life balance is this myth that's been sold to women of like, you can have it all. You want a baby, you want a family, you want a career, you want a great relationship, you want your house to look amazing and clean at all times, and you can be a high achiever at work. Listen, that's not gonna work. It's not possible. And that's a lesson too in speaking to every woman on the podcast, every woman entrepreneur. You can have it all, but not all at the same time. So you're gonna have to give some of it away at some point. And yes, when you start a business, it's fucking hard. It's you're going to be working 24/7. You're going to give it your all. I did that the first 2 years of my business, probably burnt myself out or came close to it. And you know what? When you want a successful business, like that's a hard truth that some people are not happy to hear. You're going to have to do that. So it's up to you how much effort and energy you want to put into it and at what cost. And this means different things for women who have children or women, who are supporting family members, or we each have our own unique reality. but you're gonna have to put a lot of time and energy in. And there's days still where even if you've planned to the best of your ability, tax season hits, or you have a new client coming in, or you lose an employee, something goes sideways, and it's just you. Like it's the, if you own a restaurant, you got to be prepared to clean the washrooms at some point. Like it's gonna be you unblocking the toilet at some point, because it's ultimately you're responsible for everything that happens in your company. That being said, what's changed for me over time is understanding, first of all, I remember doing this interview with, I think it was the founders of Poppy Barley, which is a great brand of accessories and footwear. They're based in Western Canada. Two sisters founded it, and they talked about how when you start your business, you better have a good therapist, because all your stuff is going to come up, right? You're on a journey of self-growth when you build a company, because it's very much you against yourself, and the stuff, the blocks that you haven't dealt with are going to come up. So for me, I'm a pretty spiritual person, and finding balance in my spiritual practice, which looks like meditation and energy work and things like that, and there's different aspects to my practice, but that is where I ground myself. That is where I can check in, call my energy back. I have amazing practitioners. I have an amazing therapist I work with. These elements have been really key to making sure I don't burn out physically, but also just from like a mental standpoint, and finding some type of balance, but also connecting this journey of self-growth that I'm on with my business and my entrepreneurial journey. For me, these two go hand in hand, and I think that's also why I find this work purposeful, because it connects to my growth as a human being as well.
Amazing. And if you can write a letter to your younger self, now knowing everything that you know and this amazing journey that you're in, what advice would you give her?
I would say stop worrying so much. Stop worrying about what everybody's gonna say. Stop worrying about what, people are gonna care about. Also, worrying doesn't serve any purpose. Once you understand that, it's always, I mean, this, I feel like this gets talked about a lot on social media and in conversations among entrepreneurs. But if you can, if there's a situation that's not going the way you need it to be, there's always a solution. You're going to do something about it. But just worrying about it helps no one. That's just energy that you are wasting 100%. So worrying about how something's going to work out or not work out, and worrying about what others are going to think or say or do, does not serve any purpose. I spend a lot of nights up or time, worrying about certain things. And you know what? It always works out. There is always a solution. And you need to also understand not to be attached to outcomes. The day I understood that reality, everything changed for me. Sometimes we have an idea of what I absolutely want that account. I absolutely want to work with that client, right? You really wanted to work with Vogue. Like that was on your vision board. And then you got there, and it was not, in fact, what was meant for your highest and best good, right?
Absolutely.
Sometimes we absolutely want that relationship, or we absolutely want to be working with somebody specifically. If it's meant for you, it's going to happen, right? And I think there is something about being clear about your purpose, being clear about things that you do want to call into your life, but don't get attached to a specific outcome, because it's probably what you're picturing or imagining is not necessarily what's actually meant for you. And I think we create a lot of disappointment for ourselves, and we tend to fall into wanting to control outcomes of situations when it's not worth it. Like, let it flow. What is meant for you will find you.
And I would like to end on that note, asking you that question. It's like, For me, I was struggling how I can make money from my purpose. And you just talk about purpose and things that are aligning for you, it's because it's meant to be. So, what advice would you have to the younger generation or, female entrepreneur in general that wanted to make money and find ways to make money from their purpose?
And that's a great question because you also can't just sit there and wait for stuff to happen to you, right? There's going to be, one of my teachers likes to say, energy flows where attention goes. So, you got to put things in motion, right? I think it's a little, I like doing that list of, what are things you're good at, what are things you like to do, and what are things that are going to generate revenue. Because there's a lot of things you can do for purpose that, guess what, they might really feed you, right? So you're starting a new initiative where, which is very much focused on mentoring and supporting others in a creative space. And that's an example of there's a way to do that pro bono. There's a way to do that to support others just as a kind gesture. There's a way to turn that into a business as well. So I think it's kind of framing it as, there's a ton of purpose-driven companies today, and and they have a viable business model. So you got to be able to figure out, what are people going to be willing to pay for? What's the added value that you're creating so that people are going to hire you for your expertise, whether it's consulting, whether you're creating a service or a product of some sort. It's possible to combine, those two things, but there's going to be a plan behind it. So finding the white space in the market as well. It's always what's the problem that people have, that business have, that you're trying to find a solution for. What is it you're good at? What is your expertise? Who's your network? Who's going to be able to help you and support you in achieving this? And I think now, because we have so much access to great stories of entrepreneurs, male and female, who are doing beautiful, amazing things. If purpose is your thing, so many great examples of B Corp, companies that are doing great things while being able to generate a revenue. So I think in 2025, that's easier than ever, but you got to do your homework.
And what's next for you for the new year?
Great question. 2024 was an interesting year for everyone. I think for me, it was also a year where, like you, I'm used to always launching, creating, coming up with something new. Having 2024 was kind of a year of working with amazing clients. We were lucky to have, I'm lucky to have wonderful clients that we do great work with. And new clients came on board. I'm really excited by some of the work we're doing around thought leadership, with many of them. I'm excited about being able to meet women entrepreneurs, across Canada and beyond. So 2025 is going to be more of that. I think 2025 is also going to be an interesting year. Unfortunately, it's been a rough start for many reasons. I think a lot of people are struggling right now with world events, the fires in California. There's a lot of heartbreaking events that we are witnessing, and that's been a tough start. So I think for all of us doing purpose work and doing impactful work with our businesses, it's going to be an important year, and that's not a it's no exception for the brand is female. I think this year, spotlighting women, supporting women more than ever, being able, for me, a big thing too is now we've talked about how I had to get used to putting myself out there, under my own umbrella, like with my own company. Being more vulnerable is something I'm working on now. Having the tough conversations, being more transparent and truthful. And I think that's when we really benefit. And I think what's been beautiful, even though we've had this tough start of the year, seeing so many of my friends, and I have clients in LA, I have people I partner with on different things, seeing the community come together and wanting to support and help each other so much has been so inspiring. We're witnessing really tough events, people, you know, losing their homes, losing their place of business, losing their livelihood, not knowing what the future is going to bring, right? And we're all watching that because it's close to us, but seeing the humanity, the level of people wanting to help their community, I think that's the theme. I think community support, you know, honesty, vulnerability is going to be a big thing for 2025, and we need it more than ever. And that's something I want to bring to my work.
Amazing. Well, I look forward to see everything you do. You've been such an inspiration, and I look forward to collaborate with you more this year.
Same here. I'm very excited. Well, thank you so much for turning the tables on me. This wasn't as
I
painful as I thought
love
it would be.
that.
Thank you so much,
Amazing.
Roxanne.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for listening to the Brandis Female Podcast. Please don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thank you to TD Women and Enterprise for their support of the Brandis Female. You've got it in you to succeed. Let TD help guide you. Visit thebrandisfemale.com to learn more.